So, Ryan Fitzpatrick, where are you right now? This is an audio-only medium. Please describe the background scene that I'm looking at, and I think I know what it is, but where are you? What's around you?
I am in Arizona right now. I think we're the only family on Earth that spends only July in Arizona. We do it backwards from everybody else, but I am in my office.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's job is quarterback for the Washington football team, and he's played in the National Football League since 2005.
So I've got all my helmets. I have actually 22 shelves, doing a very good job of filling them up right now. I've got some Harvard helmets. I've got a high school helmet. And then all the teams, except for Cincinnati, because I was too cheap at that point to buy a helmet.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Ryan. You were too cheap to buy a Bengals helmet, and so your collection is just missing this, I would say, significant stop in your trajectory.
Yeah, I need to contact the equipment manager ASAP and get two helmets for my 2 years I spent there, because I'm a little less cheap at this point.
I first encountered Ryan Fitzpatrick in the fall of 2003, back when he was a thrifty, clean-shaven college junior, and I was an involuntarily unbearded freshman. But only now, many moons after being taken in the seventh round of the 05 NFL Draft, is Fitzmagic at the peak of his powers, charming Miami last year, and about to become the first quarterback in history to start for 9 different NFL teams. So today, a long-awaited sit-down with the new leader of the Washington football team, who, despite all the turnover and turnovers, has become a special kind of football success story. One that neither of us was insane enough to imagine. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, July 19th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Yeah, Ryan, I've been watching you play football. Let's just be very blunt about this. For almost 20 years now, I did not think I'd be talking to you in 2021 as you sit in front of a zillion different NFL helmets, as you sit on the precipice of being a starting quarterback for what feels like a playoff team. And so I just want to ask you, because I've enjoyed hearing you talking to you over the years, when did you really start to lean in to the idea that, oh, this is my life? I can talk about it honestly, bluntly, forthrightly. Like, this is who I am. I'm going to own every inch of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a progression as you get into the NFL of just trying to not make any noise and hang on, you know. And I went through that probably my first 5 years in the league, where it was two in St. Louis, traded to Cincinnati. It was two there, and then it was my first year in Buffalo.
T.O. has a step, Carolines, and he's going to score 98 yards.
You know, that was an audible, by the way.
Signing as the backup there. And then as I became a starter in Buffalo for those next 3 years, that was when I finally got a little more comfortable.
This really puts a lot of stress on the defense. Empty, five receivers out in the route.
Touchdown! This time, Scott Chandler wide open.
Not in, you know, my role and not working as hard or anything like that, but more comfortable in that I was finally seen as a starting quarterback in the league.
This is for the win. The Buffalo Bills have defeated the New England Patriots. They stopped the 15
and was able to be myself a little bit. The other major point in my career where there was a transition was after my year in 2016 with the Jets, which was miserable. And I, first time in my life, I hated football and just didn't want to play anymore. Since then, it's almost like it's, you know, I've been playing on borrowed time. the last four, I've really been able to enjoy. Hopefully everybody's been able to see that for me on the field, for some of the goofy stuff and the interviews. And that's kind of my personality has really come out the last four.
Ryan, I am shocked to hear that the Jets almost beat your enjoyment of football out of you. That's never happened to a person on this planet before.
I mean, and it was just, 2015 was such a great year. It was one of my most enjoyable. We made a great run at the end and all that.
Touchdown is a game winner in overtime. Fitzpatrick, end zone. Eric Decker hauls it in. The Jets win in overtime.
But yeah, the next year, first grade is 15 was 16 was that bad. It sucked the energy and life out of me.
What did the bottom look like? What did that Jets-shaped bottom feel like to you?
It was very tough for me because I've always been able to do such a good job of separating football and home. I want my family to be able to enjoy the football part of it, but there's some stuff that I also don't really want or need them to be involved in or see. And that year, there was just so much negative, and there was just, I was in such a bad place that I couldn't really hide that part from my family. I didn't let it defeat me, but gosh, it was close. It was definitely close. Tampa Bay is an hour from Disney World, because that was essentially the decision that I made was, let's go to Florida and let's enjoy our time there. And that was the reason I kept playing and found my love for football again the last 4 years.
I mean, the way you've played over the last 4 years, Ryan, to push this metaphor further, I mean, it has felt like the NFL has been an amusement park for you. I don't know if there's another player who's had more fun doing this job. And now it feels to me like you have the best situation you have ever been in, coming off of your best season, joining what feels like a playoff team, really good skill players, a dominant defense, all that stuff. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, I do. I think this is the best situation I've ever been in, or the best situation that I've ever gone into as the guy. I signed to be the starter in Houston. I signed to be the starter in Miami. So this is now the third team that I've signed to come in and be the starter for. And I just feel like the way that I'm playing the last 4 years, kind of the progression of my career, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that 17 years in, physically I feel great, mentally, emotionally, I'm in the right spot. I just think I am set up for success this year, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And what you're describing to me, Ryan, is that it does feel like you are developing into year 17 and 18, which, as I think you admit, doesn't really happen to, I think, people in any job, and specifically NFL quarterbacks.
I mean, if you draw a line right down the middle of my career, 2014, when I went to Houston, was such an eye-opening experience for me. When I got with Bill O'Brien and George Godsey, it completely changed the trajectory of my career. And a lot of it was just being in that New England system. It was looking at the game of football in a completely different way than I had ever looked at it before. And I mean, if you go back and look at the statistics before that and after it, let's take out 2016, please, which was an anomaly. There's a huge difference, and you can see it. I mean, I've had basically two separate careers, the one pre-Bill O'Brien and the one post-Bill O'Brien. And I've been able to take a lot of that I learned and continue to just use it on the different stops that I've been in, and just taking little things from each place I've been and really knowing who I am as a player, strengths and weaknesses, and playing to those strengths.
I was going to ask you about this, the generational gulf. You're 38, your O-linemen are a bunch of 20-somethings. What is the biggest gap here in terms of relating to the young people? Is it the internet, Ryan? Because you're kind of the last holdout in sports at this point. Like, even Eli's on there on Twitter, right? Kawhi Leonard has a Twitter account. You don't. So the social media policy, when did that originate? How did it originate? How firm is that for you? The I'm off of this stuff entirely. Young people stay away.
So I was on Facebook originally, but it was only Harvard students.
That's right.
And it was a way to communicate with people in your classes for study groups.
It was about study groups. People forget when the apocalypse is told, when the story of our apocalypse as a planet is told, it starts with us trying to find people who are in our classes.
I mean, that was it. I mean, that is what I used it for. And then at some point when I was in St. Louis, when I had random people starting to reach out to me, I said, I'm done. And if anybody really needs to get a hold of me, you know, they know who I married, they'll be able to get a hold of my wife.
But you don't lurk. There's no Ryan Fitzpatrick burner out there somewhere for you to just occasionally dip into the pool.
No, there's no burner. And you could still search Twitter, you know, if I really need to seek something out, or, you know, the old fashioned Google search or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying that I've never done that. I don't have a burner. No, I'm not like some of those other athletes.
No burner, no Finsta, no fake Instagram account either. We're just going to be clear about that. You're not on there either.
No, definitely not.
All right, coming up, we learn about how at home and at work, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a dad to pretty much everyone.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So you have 7 kids. I think the most startling statistic that I have learned about you, Ryan, is that your 7 kids were born in 7 different states.
Yeah, 7 kids, 7 different states. I'm not going to tell you if they were conceived in 7 different states or not, but they were born in 7 different states. And behind me, the game balls that I have on the shelves, I have my first touchdown pass ever to Torrey Holt. I have my 100th touchdown pass to Chris Johnson. I somehow am missing my 200th touchdown pass to Alan Hearns, but the other balls are just made up of my kids' names, birthday, their stats, their height, their weight, and then which team I was on when they were born. So those are pretty special to me as well.
That's great. That's sweet. I was going to quiz you. If I were to ask you right now, give me the 7 states each of your 7 kids were born in, would you be able to rattle that off, or do you have to consult the memorabilia case?
Yeah, I could just look behind me and...
So how does fandom work then? Do they root for the same team? Do they have sort of vestigial alliances to the places that they were born? How does this all shake out?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story about my son, Tate, who's 12. He walked in the other day, this is probably 3 weeks ago, and told me he wanted a Suns hat and a Suns shirt. And he was a Heat fan last year. He's been a Cavs fan. But it's okay, because he's lived in all those states. He's lived in every single one of them.
The purity test of sports fandom, you've somehow figured out that if you just move a zillion places, you actually get to pass muster constitutionally on that.
Yeah, we've got it locked down right now. So we love the Tampa Bay Lightning at this point, you know. What do you mean you're questioning me? We lived in Tampa for 4 years, you know. So Tate's got it figured out. He's a huge Suns fan right now. We're enjoying the little run that they're on, and really hoping that they can pull it off here in the next few games.
So I want to get back to the kids in your locker room here. So beyond the like on the field schematic stuff, how much of that job to you is about human relations, is about reading the room, is about relating to the room? Because it seems like wherever you've gone, people always remark that that is a thing that you are good at.
Yeah, I think it's a huge part of playing the position and also just being approachable and making yourself available for guys. It's a big part of my job, being available, being approachable, and also just being able to provide some sort of insight, you know, and to relate my career to theirs and, you know, to try to give them confidence, whether it's on the field or off the field. That's a big part of what I do.
It does feel like you're uniquely situated to relate to both undrafted guys, even seventh rounders, and also like the glamour guys. When did it occur to you that this was going to be part of what you really care about in sports?
Well, I mean, it's the nature of the position, but you're right. Like I've, you know, going from a guy that never thought he would play a down in the NFL to being a guy that has, you know, been the starter, that has had a few, you know, contracts, maybe not the Patty Mahomes contracts, you know, I had a couple great contracts to where I've kind of lived on all sides of the spectrum there.
But how much of your personality is also aware all the time that the Harvard thing is looming?
Yeah, I mean, that part has been interesting because, I mean, the Harvard thing, basically, that's all everybody knew about me. If they knew anything about me initially, it was, oh, that's the Harvard kid. That's the Wunderlich kid. Like, that was it, you know. And it went as far as, like, people didn't even know my name. My name was Harvard for a while there, you know.
Yep.
And I do think, I know that'll always be a part of my narrative, but it's, I mean, I'm very proud of it, and I'm glad that it's part of my narrative, but it's also... it's gone away a little bit. You know, it is a little bit more about how many teams I've played on and some of the crazy plays that have happened and some of the highs and the lows, all the kids, whether it be all the stops, whether it be a specific instance on a team, the beard.
I like the idea that you've had seven kids to get people to stop asking you about college.
That was it. It was like we had four. They kept asking me about Harvard. We went to five, six. And I turned to my wife and said, we got to have one more. We got to have one more. And I think this will be the one that puts the knife in it. And seven was the magic number.
So I want to get to this notion that, okay, you are now at the glamour part of an NFL trajectory, one that is objectively successful. Like, you've thrown for, I believe, almost like 35,000 yards. You know, like, all of these numbers are crazy. That's like Terry Bradshaw echelon territory in terms of just cumulative statistics. So when you watch someone who's had like the more standard superstar career, a Pat Mahomes, a Lamar Jackson, when you watch what they do, I mean, you do the same job as them. You're also very different in terms of how you got to this point. So how do you feel watching sort of those types of superstar athletes?
I mean, I love watching them play. And with some of these guys, the quarterback position is so unique because some of these guys are so out of this world talented. I mean, when you watch Patrick Mahomes throw a football, when you watch Aaron Rodgers throw a football, Matt Stafford throw a football. I mean, I remember when I got to Cincinnati and saw Carson Palmer throw a football for the first time. And I was just like, I do not belong here. Like, this is like, I don't know what's going on. If it's like a hidden camera show or something, but like this dude was put on earth to throw a football. I mean, there are so many guys that are insanely talented. And when you get the blend of the insanely talented with the mental part of it and being able to put everything together, it's so much fun to watch. You know, and so for me, and we talked about this earlier, like one of the best things I've done or figured out over my career are the strengths and the weaknesses, and particularly the weaknesses. And how do I hide or avoid things are going to show my weaknesses and how do I really highlight those strengths.
So would your superpower then, accumulated through a unique life in this sport, would your superpower then be knowing your limits?
Yeah, it might. My superpower might be self-awareness. It might be self-awareness. I think, you know, that is a very important part of playing quarterback.
Do you miss, though, the delusion? Does any part of you miss the delusion that maybe I could do that? You know, I mean, the idea.
you've seen me play enough. I mean, I'm saying all this, and then of course I'm delusional in trying to make some of the throws.
That's what I'm trying to get you to, Ryan.
I mean, of course I'm saying I'm self-aware, but there are still a lot of throws that I want to make, that I try to make, then it doesn't necessarily happen. And sometimes those happen when you're losing in the fourth quarter, but then something crazy will happen, like the Las Vegas game last year, and that'll creep into the back of my mind. Maybe I can do it. I did it. I made the
you
throw.
Did it.
So it's a constant battle. It's a constant battle.
After the break, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to tell me the untold story of the ultimate Fitzmagic moment.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Ryan, I honestly don't know how to square the self-awareness you've described with you throwing a football very successfully with your helmet turned around and winning a game as a result of that. But I'm going to go along with you on this journey through psychological discovery, which takes us into that December game against the Raiders and that play in particular. Because to set this all up, the Dolphins benched you in November, despite you playing pretty well. And Tua Tagovailoa, who got drafted 5th overall by Miami last year, was named the starter, but he struggled in that game in Vegas. And so it's less than 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter when all of the Fitzmagic shows up. Because what you proceeded to do off the bench, man, it felt like what anyone who ever liked you wanted and wished for you to do.
Yeah, and a little bit of the backstory, which I haven't really said before, is once Tua went in, I'm glad it happened over the bye week in that it gave me a little bit of time just to step back, a little bit of time to, you know, digest my feelings and come back ready to help, ready to be there, you know, ready to coach him up, even just be an ear for him if he needed to talk to anybody. And he's a great, great kid. And I was, some guys, it's hard to be in their corner, to coach them up, to help them so much because they're not great human beings. And he is the exact opposite. I mean, he's amazing. Mm. And so as hard as that was for me not to play, in helping him out and seeing him have success and, you know, being in his corner, like that part of it was okay. Now, what I was going to get at was I wanted to prove to myself that I could come off of not just the bench, but I could come out of the stands in 5 years and come and play an NFL football game and be ready. And so I really just shifted to coach mode. I mean, in practice, one of the things that people don't realize, when you're the starter, you get all the reps. When you're the backup, you take all the scout team reps. That's how you gear up for a game every single week. So when you're the third string quarterback, you don't get anything. You really don't. And so we had a really young third string guy, Reed Sinet, and I wanted Reed to get some reps because otherwise he wasn't ever going to get some reps. So I didn't really throw it all after Tua went in. I stayed mentally sharp and ready and was still running, but I did not really throw a football during practice, especially during like a, you know, practice setting against the defense.
Hold on. You did not throw a football in practice, which feels on some level, Ryan, like wanting to prove something and also kind of like a protest. Like, I'm not even going to throw a football.
Well, it wasn't a protest. It was, I was fully into helping Tua. And at the same time. I wanted this young guy who otherwise would get zero reps throughout the year to have an opportunity, because I was in his shoes once and I sat there as a third and fourth string guy and just watched and never had any opportunity to get better. So I saw it as a way to help Reed. I saw it as a way for me to give extra help to Tua. And I also saw it as a way to prove it to myself that I could come out of the stands 5 years from now and still play this game. So,
That's the backstory. Wait, hold on. Keep going. But I did not know any of that, obviously, that your arm was cold headed into that.
It was rested. It was fresh. It wasn't, you're looking at it the wrong way. It wasn't cold. It was fresh. So I played in the Denver game and then I played in the Vegas game all the while knowing that, you know, I felt good. The arm was rested. It was ready to go. And in both games, but especially in that Vegas game, I proved to myself that I could come out of the stands in 5 years and come and, you know, play an NFL game and be successful. So that was a win for me last year.
My God, man. My God. Like, the notion, by the way, that, look, this was a season in which you had finished, and I want to be very clear about this on the record here, you finished fifth in the NFL in QBR. That was higher than Tom Brady by many advanced metrics, by many basic and advanced metrics. You just had an objectively really good season. And so you doing that with your very well-rested arm and your face mask turned all the way around so you're blind to set up that game-winning field goal, which kept you in the playoff hunt. Take me through that play, because I just need to understand specifically what happened.
It was awesome. I've been known in my day to dial some stuff up to draw it in the dirt, if you will. And that particular play, we had hit Mike Gesicki earlier in the game down the middle. I had a very good feeling with Rod Marinelli. They were going to be playing Tampa 2. So I had a very good feeling they'd have a Mike linebacker kind of running with Mike Gesicki, two safeties. And if I could spend enough time staring at Mike, I just might have a chance to hit our single receiver down the sideline. And so rarely when drawing plays in the dirt do they happen exactly like you think they're going to happen. And my career can be a testament to that. But this one did. They came out in the defense we thought they were going to come out in. I peeked to the left and then stared down Mike and stepped up in the pocket, and the safety on my left all of a sudden starts running towards Mike. And I'm in the middle of this play like, oh my goodness, like this is really going to happen. And we actually, we completed the play, flag. I had no idea after I'd thrown it that it was completed. I just knew that my head almost got ripped off. But the amazing thing about that play is like we needed those 15 yards.
Yes.
Like to get into field goal range. And it was such a cool play. It was an amazing moment. You know, it kept our playoff hopes alive. And that whole sequence after I went in, going back and forth with Carr and the different, you know, touchdowns and things. I mean, it was just, it was a fun, the end of the game was so much fun, probably not if you were a Raiders fan, but it was up until the very last 19 seconds.
See if Fitzpatrick can pull a trick out. He got hit as he lofted it up. Blown coverage! Mac Hollins is inbounds at the 41.
And you're playing cover two. You've been playing it all night long. You see the face mask right there, but you're playing cover two.
One of the greatest games, regular season games, I can recall, certainly.
Yeah, it was the end of it was wild, and it was so much fun. And then in true, I'm not going to talk in the third person, but just, you know, just in my...
Say it, Ryan.
No,
say it.
Absolutely not. But like, just, you know, my
in true
career,
Fitz magic fashion. No, that's what you wanted to say.
I was going to say, in sticking to the true form of my career, I then test positive for COVID like 3 days later.
HQ is Ryan Fitzpatrick reportedly tests positive for COVID-19, taking him out of Sunday's huge game against the Buffalo Bills.
It's unexpected. It's unknown. You never know what's going to happen. And in that case, I was just so shocked, and it was crazy, and I didn't really want to believe it, but what a great high and like truly amazing moment for me and my team in the season and for me and my career, to be followed up by the COVID thing was just crazy.
The roller coaster metaphor, Ryan, which has applied to all of the things you've described so far with us. I mean, does it feel fun to you still? The idea of the loop-de-loops?
Yeah, it's still, I mean, it's so much fun for me. And part of it is, I mean, I'm an old man out there. I mean, part of it is that, like, I'm still playing a kid's game, and for whatever reason, you know, I feel great, mind, body, soul, everything feels wonderful. And that part has been good. But the other part that's cool for me, and it doesn't happen with a lot of NFL players, is like, I get to experience this with my kids. My kids are going to remember some of these moments. You know, my kids are going to remember going to all the home games the last few years and being able to experience all that with me. And I just, that part of it is something that really keeps me going. I'm truly trying to teach them lessons through some of the experiences that I have, and for them to be old enough to experience them and see them, I think that is a really cool moment for me in my career right now.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, in the midst of a career that you wrote in the dirt, thank you for making this ride so much fun to watch.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I appreciate you. I think it's been cool. You might have been my first fan.
You are the most valuable stock that I ever unknowingly bought.
Oh, you didn't invest in Facebook. That's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah, it really is, honestly. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll try to profit off of our social media dystopia tomorrow.